Here's why you need to attend the Recruitment Coach Live Summit in London this September. Reason number one is networking. The opportunity to connect in person with like-minded recruitment business owners and share strategies and best practices. Of course, you can do that via Zoom or Teams, but the connection is deeper when you do it in real life. Wouldn't you agree? One of our previous attendees, Darcy, said that she loved the speakers and the content, but the best part for her was in between the sessions, the informal conversations with other successful business owners that sparked incredible insights and those aha moments. The quality of people in the room will be incredible, including many of the people you've heard me interview on this podcast. There's going to be big billing recruiters as well as business owners with multi-million pound businesses. What they all have in common is that they prioritize their own development. And no matter how successful they already are, they want to keep learning and growing. What's even more special and remarkable about this group is that they're all willing to share their knowledge and they're so generous at helping each other improve. Early bird pricing is still available. Register now by visiting recruitmentcoach.com/summit. Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. This is your host, Mark Whitby, and I'm excited to be joined today by Mike O'Riordan. Mike's the founder of Blackwater Search and Advisory, a global recruiting and consulting firm focused on the ETF and digital assets market. Prior to launching Blackwater, Mike has over 20 years experience in financial services. He started his career in investment banking, working at Deutsche Bank and RBS before moving to Credit Suisse, where he began his asset management career. In addition to Credit Suisse, Mike's worked at HSBC, BlackRock, and JP Morgan within various product roles covering mutual funds and ETFs. I've known Mike for almost 3 years, and I've witnessed his rapid growth from a one-man band with no recruitment industry experience to running a hugely successful firm operating internationally. Welcome, Mike. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you very much, Mark. Pleasure to be here.
Awesome. So when we first spoke back in March 2020, You were one of the very first people who went through my Billings Accelerator program, which has now evolved into our inner circle community of recruitment business owners from around the world. And you really stood out in that cohort because although you had less experience than everyone, you were leapfrogging ahead and making so much progress. I remember asking you, Mike, how are you doing this? Like, what you're achieving so much in a short time. Do you remember what you told me?
No idea.
You said, Mark, I'm just executing the shit out of this stuff.
Oh, yeah, I remember that, yeah.
Right. And so now that's a catchphrase. Like, that is famous. That's like in our Hall of Fame. Like, you need to execute the shit out of this because that really is a massive, you know, differentiator in terms of whether people make progress. You know, with... as a coach, I want people to succeed so badly. Like, I'm really rooting for people, and you can give people the frameworks, the strategies, the support, the accountability, but ultimately you can't make someone, you know, successful, right? That is 100% up to them. Yep. Have you read The 12-Week Year by Brian Moran?
No, I have not.
I think you'd like it. I'm reading it now because it was recommended by a few of our members. And the concept is that you have a plan in order to get more done in 12 weeks than others get done in 12 months. And of course, the key is planning and execution, which sounds obvious, but it's sort of a mindset shift that instead of like measuring things over a 12-month period, you literally measure, like you compress time so that your year is 12 weeks. Right. And so then every week is like a month and every day is like a week, basically, is the it is a different mindset. So but listen, let's get into this. What the heck is an ETF, first and foremost?
And an ETF is the acronym for an exchange traded fund. So most people who will be listening to this will probably have a pension, and in their pension, they will hold investment funds, which are basically vehicles where you hold lots of underlying stocks. So rather than going and buying, you know, 50, 100, 1,000 stocks, you would buy one fund, one product, which basically has all of these individual stocks within it. And it's much cheaper, it's much more efficient from an investing point of view. An exchange-traded fund is basically a fund, but it's traded on a stock exchange like the New York Stock Exchange or the London Stock Exchange. So it's exactly like a fund, except it trades like a security would on an exchange. So without getting too much into the technicalities of it here, it's basically, if you think about like analog versus digital, right, in terms of like music, for example, right, it's the Spotify equivalent of investing, basically, and investing vehicles. You know, mutual funds, which is the old investment vehicle, would be a CD or a cassette, and an ETF would be, you know, downloading your music on Spotify. It's still music, but you're just getting it in a different format.
Interesting. Good analogy. All right. That makes a lot of sense. So tell me, you were like, you had a successful career in investment banking. Why go into recruitment? It seems counterintuitive.
Well, not really. So I'd spent I think it was around 24 years working in the industry. And I'd always worked for very large organizations, like multinational organizations. And honestly, I just got tired of the bullshit. I mean, most successful people in big organizations are very good at navigating internally and politics and overcoming the bureaucracy and all those hurdles. And I just didn't have the patience for that. I'm a type of person who says it as they see it type thing, and that's not a good trait to have when you work for these organizations, because you tend to put your foot in it too much and rub people up the wrong way. And it took me 24 years to realize that, yeah, this is not for me. I just got frustrated and just bored of it. And I really kind of came to the conclusion that all we're doing is just moving widgets around a spreadsheet, basically. We're not really doing anything meaningful. I mean, my job, most of my jobs were involved in like creating these new investment products and bringing them to market. And, you know, in most cases, it's just the company are just trying to flog products to the end investor rather than be it the other way around and try to provide solutions to investors. So I just thought, you know what, like there's more to life than this and I've had enough of it. So I decided that, you know what, I'm going to set up a recruitment business. And, what I'm going to say might be a bit controversial here for some of your listeners, but all through my career, I had dealt with recruiters, headhunters on two sides, from the candidate side myself, looking for a job myself and dealing with them. And also when I was a hiring manager and looking to fill new roles and dealing with them then. And, you know, I'm making kind of a very sweeping generalization here, but my experience was that most of them were just shit, basically, in terms of like how they went about their business, the service that they provided. And they were just like secondhand car salesmen. That was my kind of feeling, right? I was a widget. I was basically like, it was something to be bought or sold in the middle of a transaction. And I just thought to myself, you know what? There's something wrong. Like I knew they like earned lots of high fees for what they did. And I thought, there's something wrong with this model. And then I thought, well, you know, if these idiots can do it, like surely I can do it as well. So they're no smarter or dumber than me. So I said, okay, well, why don't I put my money where my mouth is and set this up? And my whole kind of value proposition was that, look, I've worked in the industry a long time myself. You know, I can walk the walk and talk the talk. I know the language of the candidate. I know the language of the hiring manager. So there's some value there. So that was my logic kind of behind it. And that's the reason I set up the recruitment business. But, you know, I was like totally naive. And even though like, you know, it's 3 years, it's like, for me, I'm still totally naive in a lot of things. I had no experience whatsoever of sales beforehand.
Wow. Okay.
No idea about marketing. I was a product guy. I built like products and did project management and technical type stuff, right? You know, selling ideas to people and managing people and influencing it. That was not me at all. Not at all. And seriously underestimated the learning curve and what was involved in it. And like, you know, I'm still, even if I look at where I am in terms of the learning curve, I'm still at the base of Mount Everest. There's, and when I look up, there's a wall in front of me still. So for me, it's still very early days. But basically, that's why I got into the market, and that's why I started a recruitment business. But then the business evolved, and now we've got two businesses now. So there's two pillars. There's the recruitment pillar, and then there's a consultancy pillar as well. And the consultancy pillar is different to the recruitment in the sense that we help companies who want to get into this particular industry, and we help them in terms of like, you know, here's to do the due diligence. This is how you enter the market. This is how you build the business. This is how you you deal with, you know, distributing your products across different markets. And we do that predominantly in Europe, because Europe is quite a technical market. So it's basically me leveraging off of my product experience, because I built like a number of ETF businesses at some of the firms you mentioned. So I know how to do this, and it's just me taking that knowledge that was in my head and now trying to offer it as a service to clients, to firms, to asset management companies who want to enter the ETF business in Europe. So completely separate business to the recruitment business. Sometimes they cross over. So for example, if I have a consulting client and they want to build a business from scratch, as part of building a business, you want to hire a team. So there's a kind of a crossover at some stage, but sometimes there's no crossover and they just run in parallel. So that's essentially it.
I can see how they're hugely complementary, though, in terms of yes. Not only the crossover, but just the marketing and the, you know, everything else. So just circling back to your early days in recruiting, and look, perception is reality. So that was your perception of recruiters. And obviously, I don't share that opinion. I'm sure, you know, like every industry, there's people who are better than others, right?
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
And there for sure are going to be some bad actors as well who are, you know, manipulative and self-serving. But I, in my experience, having been in this industry for 25 years, I feel like most people don't get out of bed in the morning thinking I'm going to do a crap job today, right? It could be, you know, lack of experience, lack of training, or you know, there's a number of factors. In fact, I had a guest on the show, Somer Hackley, who wrote a book about executive search called Executive Search Demystified. And she and I chatted a lot about this, like why do customers have such a bad experience of our industry? And we kind of delved into that in terms of like the dynamics, the target pressure, the deadline pressure, you know, and how we get, you know, incentivized and all that sort of thing. But do you feel like you have any more empathy for the recruiter now that you've experienced it on the other side?
No.
Okay.
I totally share your opinion there. And I'm like, and I, as I said, I am making a sweeping generalization, which is completely unfair. And maybe I just came across, you know, the wrong people. And then, you know, and of course, different people in different industries are, that's not the same. But I think my biggest gripe is that I think there's the ones that I experienced anyway, they were, I could feel they were taking too many, like knowing what I do now, they were taking too many shortcuts, basically, right?
Right.
They wouldn't take the time to really get to know you well enough and understand what you as a candidate, what your goals and aspirations were and how they could add value to that. And they didn't seem to kind of give any value to a long-term relationship, right? One of the things we all know now is that, you know, a candidate can become a client, right?
Of course.
Well, the people that I spoke to back then, like that message clearly hadn't been communicated to them because they weren't behaving in that manner. But I mean, when I say about kind of, you know, taking shortcuts, you know, I've had cases and experiences to me in the past whereby my CV would have been sent out to a firm without my prior knowledge, right? That's just
right. That's absolutely poor. Absolutely. Yeah.
That is poor. And I'm not, in my industry, I'm not the only one who's had that happen to. That's a pretty frequent occurrence.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, it's those kind of little things that, you know, just don't resonate well with the.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree 100% with that. I think it's that, it's probably the I know so many outstanding, you know, really exceptional recruiters, not just in terms of their professionalism, but just their character and their personality and everything else. And so I think I probably have a skewed view because the people that I'm surrounded by and I'm attracting to work with are, you know, and on this podcast are high quality individuals. Yeah. So that's maybe not, you know, an accurate representation of the whole industry.
No, for sure. And I think you make a good point because you see it from maybe from the lens of the recruiter, right? You don't always see it from the lens of the candidate, whereby I have seen it from the lens of the candidate a long time. Mm-hmm. And even like speaking to all of the colleagues I've had in over the course of my career, pretty much all of them share the same view that I held about recruiters, that yeah, there's just no respect for the recruiters because most of them have had similar experiences whereby their CV has been sent out without their knowledge, or they just feel like they're like a widget in the transaction here. So
for sure, like, look, on the candidate side of the equation in particular, I think as an industry, recruiters don't always do the best job. And, you know, in terms of what you're talking about, cutting corners, I mean, that's so basic to, you know, get to know someone, understand their aspirations, seek to have a long-term relationship, set ground rules in terms of, you know, and identify companies that are aligned with their goals, and then, you know, get their approval before, you know, shortlisting them for a position and so on and so forth. That's just so basic. Like you wouldn't think you would even need to explain that.
Yeah.
So yeah, I hear where it came from. On the other hand, that's in some ways a good thing because it's so easy for you to differentiate.
Sure. Yeah. Like I keep on saying to the guys on my team, like the bar is low, right? In terms of, from my point of view, in terms of the standard and being able to differentiate yourself, the bar is very low. And even again, you know, going back, I remember an experience I had, you know, towards the end of my kind of my other career, whereby I came across this recruiter and he actively kind of sat down with me and said, okay, what kind of firms are of interest to you? And I said, well, I'd like to, you know, like this ABC are really interesting. And then he proactively went out to those firms and got me a coffee with the relevant people in those companies. And I was like, wow, this guy is amazing, right? Like that's just awesome. He, in an instant, he just completely differentiated himself from every other recruiter I'd ever spoken to just by, you know, taking that extra step. And from his point of view, it was like a, you know, a 10 second phone call or an email type thing. It was nothing for him. But from my perception, it was like, gosh, this guy is incredible. He's like, this is the best recruiter in the world.
That's hilarious. And so now you know that like MPC marketing is just pretty standard. Exactly. That's nothing special.
Exactly. Yeah.
If you have a fantastic candidate, which I'm sure you know you were, he's just thinking, well, someone's going to hire Micah Reardon. I may as well be the one who gets the fee for it.
No brainer. Yeah. But like that was the only guy in over 20 years that had ever done that.
Wow. So. Mike, I honestly think you've just like you've dealt with some horrible recruiters. I think your window into the industry was tainted by just a few.
Maybe I'm traumatized.
I think so. But listen, you referenced your team there. So could you describe the size and shape of the organization now, like 3 years, I guess 4 years in?
Yeah. So there's 11 of us in total now. So it's still pretty small. So I've got four or five people doing recruiting, and that's split from actually like the recruiters and and support people, researchers type individuals. And then I've got a couple of business development people, and a couple of people who help me on the consulting side. And then I've got one marketing person, soon to be two marketing people. So that's kind of how it's structured right now. And I'm one of these people who, because you know, I've heard from listening to your material and being on some of your courses before, a lot of people kind of like give a lot of value to the size of the team. Or like, you know, my goal is to have 10 people, 20 people, 100 people over the course of time. I don't understand that thinking, because for me, like, as the business grows, you'll have as many people as you need. So if you need to have 100 people, that means like the business is really good. But if you only need to have 10 people to achieve your objectives, then 10's the number, right? So it's not the number of people that counts. It's like what the output is and what the end result is. So for me, that always comes first. So if I think, yeah, look, we've got more business than we can handle right now, we need another person, then yeah, I'll go and I'll hire another person. So that's kind of how I think about it. But when I was structuring the team, and I kind of got this from speaking with you and from listening to some of your material and your podcast guests, hiring like a marketing person was like probably one of the first things I ever did, because for me, just building my brand and positioning myself as that kind of subject matter expert, which is like high on my priority list, has been absolutely kind of key to our success so far. And for me, I'd much prefer to have a business whereby it's all inbound kind of leads generated, as opposed to having to go out and hunt for them every day. So I'm all for picking the fruit off the lowest hanging fruit, rather than, you know, having to get a ladder and climb to the top of the tree. So marketing and building that kind of marketing machine is, yeah, it's still a work in progress, but like high on my, anybody who's starting the industry now, I would strongly recommend they start with a marketing person or a marketing team.
It's really interesting, Mike, because so your first marketing person was employee number what?
Probably employee number two. So I again, following your advice, I hired like an assistant, and that was employee number one, just to do like all the stuff that I didn't want to do. And then the marketing person was number two, I would say. And there's definitely a kind of a strong correlation between what happened with the business pre hiring that marketing person and post hiring that marketing person.
Can you elaborate on that?
Like in terms of the brand recognition, in terms of firms that know us now. So without naming names, I mean, when I had started, you know, there's certain firms that, you know, just would not have even like wouldn't have given us a second look, right? Because they don't know who we are. We're a dot in the kind of ocean. And these are like global firms, like massive firms, household names. And now we had a really cool example before Christmas, whereby we did this video series, and we published it on LinkedIn and sent it out to our distribution network. And one of these like really big global asset managers basically reached out to us and said, "Oh, look, we saw you did this. We'd love to collaborate with you on something similar." And I was like, "That is just awesome." I was just so happy when I got that email that day, because for me it just meant like this is working, right? We've got that brand recognition is coming now. And like 3 years ago, like that person would never have reached out to me, no way. But it was just that, you know, little bit, one brick at a time, day after day, just building the kind of building the brand, just being in people's faces, and it works. But you have to have something kind of meaningful behind it, and you know, producing kind of like quality content of like that really serves a value is kind of core to the whole thing that underpins the whole messaging, really.
100%. And you like, just looking at your website, Blackwater Search, you've implemented like, the thing with you, Mike, is you implement like crazy. So like basically everything I've ever suggested to you, like it's done. Like it's up on the website. I can see you taking action, which is fantastic. I'm just wondering why it took, because you finally launched a podcast. Why did it take you so long to do the podcast? I told you like 2 years ago to do a podcast.
Well, I remember the very first conversation I had with you. You told me, you probably told this to everybody else as well. You told me, oh, you should launch a podcast. It's a great way to generate leads. You should definitely launch a podcast. And I was like, yeah, it should. I just didn't have the confidence back then to do that is probably the honest answer. I mean, the idea of, and I suppose a lot of people will like resonate with this, is that I even remember my first kind of LinkedIn post like that. I just felt vulnerable, right? You're putting yourself out there and you're lining yourself up to be shot down or to be criticized. And that's a vulnerable position when you're not used to it. And I certainly was in that camp. So, you know, being of that mindset to like, you know, Lord, yeah, you should do your own podcast. I was like, whoa, dude, this just seems like a million miles away. Even like doing videos, right? Which was it's one thing to do like a post something on LinkedIn, but then like actually do a video and you're out there, and then to have your voice recorded and do podcasts. That was, for me, that was a journey I kind of needed to. And sometimes people are just like at a point in time and come in your life when you're just ready to do something or you're not. I mean, even I still remember now, like a couple of years back when I worked at JP Morgan, I distinctly remember this example. I was sitting one Friday night, I was sitting in a pub with a very good friend of mine, a colleague of mine, and he was a guy who was, he always wanted to have his own business, always talking about entrepreneurial ideas, I could do this and I could do that. And I was there like, yeah, that sounds great, but that's not me. I'm a salary guy and I always will be a salary guy. And when I look at myself now and compare myself to the guy sitting in that pub, I'm just like, who is this? They're two different people. I could not in my wildest imaginations could I have see myself kind of do where I am now and, you know, and launch my own business. So sometimes you just need to be like, things happen. You're like, shit happens, right? So, you know, something happens in your life and then, you know, a spark happens and now you're ready to do something that a year ago, perhaps you were not. So
that's an amazing, amazing story, Mike. So like, I'm really curious, you're describing a transformation or like a personal development, you know, evolution in mindset and confidence, from being someone who couldn't even imagine starting a business to like then starting your own business to then someone who like didn't feel like you had the confidence to do a podcast, and now you're doing a podcast. What was the shift? You know, what caused that shift, for example, to feel, okay, now I'm ready to do a video, or now I'm ready to start posting content on LinkedIn. Okay, now I'm ready to do a podcast. What would you attribute that to?
Just the kind of, you know, that just get shit done mentality. I'm like, I'm all of the mindset that, look, just do it and make it up as you go along, right? I could be sitting here and working, and I've had examples of this in the past, and you know, observing people who work with me as well, where you're just trying to, before you actually release something, you want to get it perfect. It has to be absolutely perfect. The perfect podcast, the perfect whatever it is, right? The perfect report. And you just spend so much time just trying to, like, you know, trying to get it done, whereas just do it today. Just get it done. It doesn't have to be perfect. You'll, over the course of time, it'll get better and better. I think the most important thing is just to do it. And that's, for me, that's way more important than trying to make it perfect before I do it, right?
100%.
And you know, some people they're perfectionists, right? It has to be 100% before they're happy with it. I'm like, well, it was 70%. That's good enough for me. Now we'll work on the other 30 over the course of time and make it better.
Mike, that is so true. Listen, perfectionism has cost me millions of dollars. Seriously, if I look back over my like the progress I've made laterally is like, if I look at my 21 years as a coach, the progress is glacial. It's so slow over time. And then like we've had it's almost like compound interest. Like if, you know, those investment, you see the chart of like investing for the long term and what, you know, the power of compound interest. I'm now getting that upward rise finally. But I think the reason it didn't tick up sooner is procrastination. Yeah. Perfectionism is another word for procrastination, right? It's making excuses and like overly and like analyzing everything. And I'm so over that, but it's still hard for me to push, you know, I have to keep pushing against that tendency.
I totally understand that. And I think, you know, from when I was, one of the kind of things that really kind of resonated with me was the guy that founded Reid Hoffman, I think his name is. So he has a podcast as well. And I remember like listening to one of his podcasts and he was saying that you should be embarrassed by the first product that you launch. And I think like now I understand what he means by that is that like, you know, it doesn't have to be perfect. Just get it out there, and then you'll polish it over time, right?
Yeah.
And that's kind of, you know, I kind of took that on, and that's what I'm trying to do now. And there's lots of stuff that I have, and that I know is like it's going to be 100 times better, you know, in 6 months' time, in a year down the line. And I look back and say, oh my gosh, that was horrible back then. But it doesn't matter. It's the fact. What matters is that you're actually doing it now. And you're learning as you do it, and you're getting better. And you know, when you're trying to like that, the whole kind of perfectionism is like you're working in this bubble, like you're working in your little laboratory. Well, you don't live your life in a laboratory, right? You live your life on the street, so you got to get out there.
Yes, well said. Absolutely. So I want to circle back to marketing because I think it's something you've done a particularly good job with, and it's compensated for, like you told me that you still feel like you have a lot to learn in terms of recruitment, and that you still like are on that learning curve, and yet your results are superior, I'd say, to 90% of other recruiters and recruiting firms out there. Like you are definitely already hit the top 10% of the industry globally with only 4 years experience. And I, there's a number of reasons for that. I mean, obviously your mindset, your psychology, your subject matter expertise in the industry you serve obviously is a factor. I think marketing has allowed you to punch above your weight, Mike. And in fact, go ahead.
No, definitely. Yeah.
Is that your, you've got an award on your shelf there. Is that your award for your content?
That's an award for content we won last year, which again, I got a massive kick out of that because, you know, you said punching above our weight. So this is like one of these kind of industry awards that take place in Europe. And we were put forward for best content piece of the year. And we were up against multinationals, right? With like research teams. And we won, right? And I was like, this is awesome. It's like it's David versus Goliath, like at a massive scale. So you know, these little wins just give me a massive kick because I do realize we are totally punching above our weight, but that's the goal.
Beautiful. So could you give a few specifics around like what you're doing on the marketing side in order to have that positioning where you are now getting recognition from huge global players?
Yeah. So we do a number of things. So one of the first things we started to do was we published a weekly newsletter, and it's a very simple document. Basically, it just summarizes. It's a global document, and we have it split by region, like US, Europe, and Asia. And all it does is basically summarize sort of news clips from what's going on in those regions every week. And the reason I did that was twofold. Was because one, as a user, like when I was kind of sitting at the desk, this kind of thing would be very useful because there's so much information out there, right? So if I had one document which kind of summarizes everything quite nicely, that's going to be useful for me. So as a user, I thought, this is quite useful. So let me kind of produce this. But then I also thought, well, this is a great way for us just to you know, to get in front of people every single week, right? It's just trip. We land into their email boxes every Tuesday morning. So they subconsciously, they all know who Blackwater is, right? That's the goal. So, and the idea being that, oh, when they need to, they want to like make a hire or they want to do a consulting project, then, you know, hopefully we are the first person that, that has come to mind. So it's kind of like that one-on-one marketing, get into their subconscious, right? So that was the idea of the newsletter. And, you know, over time it's growing. We get great feedback from it and people say, look, this is amazing. And it's definitely the best newsletter out there in the space. And I'm like, you know, I really appreciate that feedback. So the newsletter has been going like since the beginning now. And so we do that. We do like thought piece reports. So the goal, like last year, we were doing like one a quarter. And this is a big kind of, you know, 15, 20 page document, which could talk about a particular theme within the industry, right? So a very kind of technical document. And the idea of those documents is, you know, to position us as subject matter experts, right? Because you really need to know what you're talking about to produce these documents. And they have been useful again, you know, for that reason, but also in terms of like generating business opportunities as well, which like underpins the whole thing, right? You want to generate inbound leads. So we produced these like thought pieces. We do like a salary survey, which we've
talked. Sorry, Mike, just to comment there. When you say thought piece, I would call it a market insight report. Like you're providing insight. It's like an executive briefing sort of document, right?
Insight, yeah, on a particular like yeah.
Okay, fantastic. So salary survey, you were about to say.
We've done the salary survey. We've kind of done this every 2 year basis at the moment. So again, you know, that's a piece of content. And obviously, that's been very successful because everybody loves seeing that type of information. So we do that. Videos is something that we started to break into last year, where we were, again, we could pick a kind of a topic and maybe do a kind of a series of videos around them. So one example is that, like last year, at the end of last year, we did a series of videos with a company called Vanguard, who are like a very well-known international investment company, and all of these are their education pieces, right? So my kind of mantra is, I sell via education, right? Rather than like, hey, you know, I've got any jobs type thing. We're trying to provide value first and foremost, by educating the industry. But anyway, so this was a series of videos around how ETF distribution works around Europe, right? And we recorded these videos with various Vanguard sort of people across Europe and publish those. And now we're going to do another series around another topic in the industry. Ultimately, my goal would be, I'd like to have what I'm going to call a portal, whereby I've got all of this industry content in this portal and we can split it by subjects and themes and whatever. And then people can, and if they want to learn about the industry, they can go in, pick their subject and listen and watch a couple of videos. So, you know, that's what I would like to do at some stage in the future. And this is like, you know, education, giving back, providing value. That's the kind of the underpinning all of this. So the videos as we do, like the podcasts, as we kind of mentioned, I started that, I think in November, something like that. So early days on that. The podcasts I find, I really should have listened to your advice 3 years ago, because in terms of it being a way to like walk through that door in terms of like, you know, so for example, I've reached out to people that I've had no prior relationship whatsoever, never spoken to this person. And I could have said, hey, Mr. Joe, I'm a recruiter. Could we work with you? And they're going to go, yeah, go away. No, thanks. But instead I've gone, hey, you know, I've got this podcast. This is what we do, blah, blah, blah. Would you be a guest? And they've gone, yeah, I'll be a guest. And then, you know, having a chat with them, you're building a relationship. They're going, so what do you guys do? Well, we do this, this, and this. Oh, that's interesting. Well, maybe we could work together. Like, boom, you know, it just, it's another way in the door, right? So
100%. So that's what we call our expert interview strategy. And that's, you've just given a really nice summary of how that works, Mike. So newsletter, market insight, report, salary survey, video series, podcast, anything else?
That's it. Webinars is something I haven't done yet, but something I want to do this year as well. So that's on the to-do list.
Awesome.
That's kind of it for now.
Fantastic.
Open to your suggestions if you have.
Yeah,
any.
Well, webinars, 100%. Let me know when you're ready to do that. I can definitely help with that. I've done probably a few thousand webinars over the last 15 years or so. When I started doing webinars, Mike, you had to explain what a webinar was. People didn't know. Like, they were like, wait, what? And you're like, it's like a telephone conference, except it's over the internet. And you had to like, so every time I marketed it, I had this paragraph at the bottom, what is a webinar? And then like having to explain the concept to people so that they would know what it was that I was asking them to sign up for.
So, yeah.
And look, just wanted to point out a couple of things. Newsletter, great place to start. And what's awesome is that this is an example of how you've not let perfectionism stop you, because like the way that your newsletter is now compared to when you first started, it is so much better. Like the content is more or less the same, but just the whole presentation of it, the way it looks and everything, it looks fantastic now, Mike. And I don't feel that was always the case, but you just improved it as you went along. And the other interesting thing was, you got, even in its earliest form, people liked it. They appreciate it. The value of the information was so good. And the other beauty of that is, you were not like some of the things you're doing now, like the market insight, the videos, the podcast, you're sharing your industry knowledge, and there's a lot of effort that goes into those. The newsletter, you were almost curating information that was already out there and putting it in one place, right? So in terms of effort versus reward, I'm not saying there's no effort, because even just deciding which pieces are relevant, which are going to be the most interest to my market, obviously you have to know your market in order to determine that.
Yeah.
But you didn't have to like write articles or that kind of stuff.
No. As you said, it's just basically you're curating and just sorting information in an easy to digest format for individuals. So there's no rocket science behind it. Like anybody can go out and do this. And as you also said, like people appreciated the content, right? It was that most of them really don't give a crap about the format, right? But what you actually have in there is more important than how it looks. Yeah, of course, making it look nice is a cherry on the cake, but that shouldn't prevent you from just going out and starting just to do it, right? If you've got something that's going to be of use to people, then just focus on that.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you mentioned doing videos. That seems like a big leap in terms of effort and also confidence, because it's one thing sending out a newsletter where you're curating information, it's industry statistics and knowledge about like what's happening in your market, and then salary survey, again, you're like doing research, putting your thoughts out there. How did you get, like, talk to me about the thought process of starting to do videos, because this makes most people just so uncomfortable, and they don't like the way they sound, they don't like the way they come across on camera, it just gives them pangs of anxiety. So how did you make that leap?
So I hated the way I sounded. Never liked, I would run a mile from a recording of my voice. And now I'm just kind of used to it. You just get used to anything, basically.
Yes.
Right? That's how humans operate. Like the videos are like, they're not a big deal in terms of like the effort, because they're interviews with other people. So all you got to do is ask the questions. Like the other person is doing all of the work. So it's not like kind of the reports, right? Which take a lot of effort, because we actually physically have to write those ourselves. Whereas the videos or even the podcasts, right? It's the other person's doing all of the work. You're just sitting there asking the questions. And so, look, it's just taking that leap again, right? Okay, you don't like the way you sound. You don't like the way you look. Just get over it.
Exactly.
After a couple of episodes, you just won't even notice anymore. And I promise you that if you start doing videos today or whatever you want, and it generates results, then you'll be super glad you started to do it, and you won't give a crap how you sound or how you look anymore. So that's what I would
exactly say. Mike, well said, because I think, well, there's two aspects. Number one is how badly do you want the results? Because like, if this strategy is going to get you those results faster or get you even better results, you know, aren't you willing to do what it takes to achieve that goal? And if it means being uncomfortable and, you know, having to record a video, then isn't the end result worth it? And number two, so that's more from a self-interest point of view, but I would argue also, like, if you have a duty and an obligation to share what you know with as many people as possible and try and have a bigger impact on the world in a positive way. And if you like don't share that knowledge and that value outside of the few people that you're able to interact with, like in person, like candidates and clients who you interact with on a day-to-day basis, yeah, then you're really doing your market a disservice. And you're also, like, I don't know, it seems selfish to hold back on your knowledge that could help somebody else.
Absolutely. Because, you know, at the end of the day, like, the reason we do what we do now is that we want to make a difference, right? We want to add value and really feel that, yeah, what my work is meaningful here. I'm actually doing something that is benefiting others. So you owe it to yourself and everybody else to share that. So look, I would just say, just get comfortable being uncomfortable, basically, right? You know, just get over it.
Yeah, that is a powerful statement. I love that. And I think that is so important. Like, like that relates to everything in life, doesn't it, Mike? Get
totally
comfortable being uncomfortable. And like, if you're not uncomfortable, you're probably not, you're not trying hard enough. You're not pushing yourself.
I would definitely agree with that one, because, you know, I've worked on stuff like last year and even now where I'm like, holy shit, how do I do this? I have no idea. I've said yes to a client without having any idea how I'm going to do it, but you'll just figure it out, right? You'll figure it out. And like, I think when our backs are to the wall, that's when we really kind of realize that there's stuff within us that we can do we never really imagined. But in order to kind of to get to that moment of realization, your back does need to be against that wall, right? Because when you're living in your comfort zone the whole time, nothing ever happens. I suppose it's like going to the gym, right? If you're not really kind of like working out and, you know, falling out of the gym every day, then your muscles are not going to grow or you're not going to get fitter. So you got to take your body to the edge in order to make it grow. And it's the same with your business, right?
Absolutely. I noticed we've got the same watch or a similar watch on. And running for me was that example of like, I hated it, Mike.
I remember you saying that. Yeah.
I was never a runner. I did work out at the gym. I enjoyed that. It didn't feel like, although you're putting effort in, it didn't feel as taxing, like of your whole system. And like from your just, yeah, I absolutely hated it. And then I realized that's the reason to do it.
Totally.
And you're just making excuse. You're wimping out because you don't enjoy it. And that's why you must do it. And so, and that's been a huge personal journey for me, which has impacted so many other areas, not just because I'm now in really good shape, but also just the mental shift of gears in order to get yourself to do something that you hate, that you find like really uncomfortable, and then get yourself to do it consistently and find. And actually, now it's at the point where that's not uncomfortable enough. So then you need to find something else. You either need to reset the goal, which I did last year. I ran a half marathon, which again, like, I would have never imagined I could even do that. It just seemed like such an impossible thing to do.
Yeah.
And then you just either need to reset the bar or you need to find something else that makes you uncomfortable to pursue next.
Once you've done it, once you've achieved it, I mean, the sense of purpose you feel is just, it's incredible, right? It's like it's the wind under your sails or under your wings, right? So it's definitely worth it when you do put yourself out there and just go for it.
So what you said about your back against the wall and like being uncomfortable, you know, get comfortable being uncomfortable, and tying this back into business and marketing and podcasting, we help a lot of people launch their podcast. I think we've had 3 or 4 people launch this month. We've probably got 12 or 15 of our members who have podcasts now. And the best way to overcome the procrastination is book your first guest. Because when you have that commitment in your calendar to actually, you're going to do it, you'll figure it out. You have to figure it out. Whereas if you say, well, I'm going to get the artwork done and the music and the website set up and the equipment and everything, I'm going to do all that first and then I'll start reaching out to people, you'll probably never do it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. That's exactly what I did as well. Last year, it was on my list of to-do things. And then as the year was going on, it was still on the list of to-dos. And I was like, hang on a second, I need to get this done. So that's what I actually just did. I reached out just to a bunch of people, said, look, I'm starting this podcast. Will you be a guest? And like the first person that came back and said yes, then I was like, okay, holy shit, I actually need to make this happen now for whenever the recording is going to be. So that really was a kind of kick in the ass that I needed to just get it done. So totally agree with you on that point, Tim.
Awesome. So Mike, you've already shared, like, you're more about being lean and mean and having a profitable business rather than having a huge business. But what is the vision, like, over the next year to 3 years? What's next at Blackwater?
World domination.
Oh, just that.
Just that. I mean, I suppose, you know, when you start off, you can either decide whether I want this to be a lifestyle business or I actually want to, you know, launch something that has the ability to kind of run on its own and take a life of itself. And I wasn't sure what I kind of wanted to begin with, and then I suppose it just kind of naturally kind of fell that actually, no, I wanted this to be like a proper business that can run without me. And right now the goal is, you know, you mentioned this book the 12 week a year book or whatever. That's like, my goal is to have this business run without me being necessary or me being the key that kind of spins the whole wheel. That's when I get to that position, then I know like I've been successful. How big that wheel turns out to be, you know, for me, the sky is the limit. I still feel that I'm just sort of scratching the surface, and there's so many, you know, or products, or, you know, it's version 101 at the moment. And, you know, we can go a lot higher in terms of the quality and what we do. You know, there's so many things in the recruiting space. Yeah, you can choose to have a recruiting company, but there's so many other things that can spin off from that, right? You could have a training kind of business, right, which kind of falls very naturally into the recruiting, which is something that we're in the process of launching as well. We have an executive coach. Oh, I forgot one of the people who work with. We have an executive coach who works with us now as part of the team. And you know, building out a kind of a training business is just, you know, I see it as just another natural progression of in terms of the recruiting business. The consulting business that we have, we've just started a PR kind of service, which I see as a natural progression of that as well. I mentioned to you about, you know, I'd like to have this sort of like training and development portal whereby people can go in and watch videos about different segments of the industry. And I'd love to kind of, you know, build that into something kind of like proper and meaningful and commercialize that. So I've got like 1,000 ideas in my head about other stuff we can do.
Yeah.
And I guess the challenge for me is, okay, well, what do I focus on, the kind of the bread and butter or right now, like, and, you know, keep my eyes on the prize, or do I sort of like, you know, try and expand and add on all these kind of complementary businesses and really kind of, you know, shoot for the stars? And, you know, there's two ways of looking at it, right? You should, always pay attention to what pays the bills. But, you know, again, going back to being uncomfortable, you got to aim big, right? You got to have big ambitions, because if you set the bar low, then you'll probably get low results. But if you set the bar like crazy high, you may not reach it, but you'll reach a hell of a lot higher than if you just set the bar low, right? So that's kind of my mindset. I may crash and burn or or become a superstar, you know, one or the other.
I love it, Mike. That's a perfect way to like wrap up the podcast with that. I can't really add anything to what you've just said. So this has been awesome. Thanks very much. Really enjoyed it.
Pleasure, Mark. Pleasure. Always happy to speak to you.
Fantastic. All right. Well, let's do this again like next year and see, you know, how far you've gone, Mike. But listen, have an awesome rest of your day.
You too. Take care.